Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm joined by Melvin Goodman, who is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His 42-year government career included service at the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, and the United States Army. In 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials to testify before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as Director of Central Intelligence on the grounds that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. He's the author of Failure of Intelligence, the Decline and Fall of the CIA. Welcome to Background Briefing, Melvin Goodman.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be with you again.
And the shuffling of the chairs here at CIA, where General Petraeus is slated to replace Leon Panetta, and Leon Panetta shuffling off to the Pentagon to replace Robert Gates. That is, of course, the big headline. But beneath the headline, what do you think? Is there more to this? I mean, you know, there's always been this feeling that the CIA have got the brains, but they don't have the brawn and they don't have the budget, and that the military have the budget and the brawn, but they don't have the brains. But apparently, this general, Petraeus, is one of the more brainy generals, right?
Well, we've given Petraeus an iconic standing that I don't believe he deserves. Obviously, he's tactical specialist, has worked well in the field in Iraq and Afghanistan. He hasn't brought the great changes in Afghanistan that we were led to believe would come with his appointment when McChrystal had to be replaced. But more importantly is the militarization of the CIA, which I think is wrong. Harry Truman created the CIA in the late 1940s to get the CIA out of the policy community. So now not only is he sent in a very high-powered general, but a general who's identified with two wars, a war in Iraq and a war in Afghanistan, and the intelligence on both of those issues doesn't support the policy or the mission of the United States government. So you have to wonder, will a general who's used to the chain of command and going down into the pecking order for dictating opinions and dictating lessons to be learned, is he going to accept the contrarian advice of the intelligence community? But even worse to me is the notion that Leon Panetta, who has not been an effective or strong director of the CIA, which is a very small bureaucracy by Washington standards, is sent over to a bureaucracy with a budget of $800 billion and over 2 million personnel, counting uniformed civilians and independent contractors. This seems to be a very bizarre move, and I think it sends the signal that we're not going to see any changes from Obama in the Pentagon. They can talk about reform, they can talk about reducing the budget, but I don't think Leon Panetta is that kind of fighter. He certainly wasn't a fighter at the CIA. He didn't show any sign of having the real stamina that was needed to run that much smaller organization.
So the fact that he has experience as the budget head of OMB, that doesn't give you any sense that that's why he's been given the job, that they've got to trim the fat?
Job in a very reluctant way, because I don't think Obama wanted to lose Gates in the first place. He wanted to keep Gates in the Pentagon as long as possible, and the timing of all these moves is very peculiar because Obama really only has a year left before he's heavily into the campaign season. There are serious foreign policy issues and defense issues that are right on the table right now, dealing with Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, the entire Middle East and Southwest Asia in general, a defense budget that needs to be reformed at a time that we have a serious deficit problem and have to look for cuts in very important places. But Panetta sends the signal that it's going to be business as usual. And then to send a military man into the CIA from a president who has used too many military people, a Marine general who was his first national security advisor, an intelligence czar who was first a retired admiral and now a retired general, sending general officers out to Saudi Arabia and to Afghanistan and to very sensitive political and diplomatic posts, I think sent the wrong signal about Obama's unwillingness to deal with the military and to sort of cater to the tremendous power that the Pentagon has acquired in Washington over the last 10 years.
Well, Mel Goodman, in that regard, Obama has at least reversed that a little bit by sending a diplomat, Ryan Crocker, to replace a military guy as the ambassador to U.S. ambassador
to
Afghanistan.
But here, in this case, he's a fine diplomat. I work with Ryan at the National War College. He was probably one of the leading diplomats of the Foreign Service. He retired because he was exhausted. I know that for a fact. And my guess is his arm was twisted pretty hard to get him to go out to Kabul. He's served in about five or six Middle Eastern countries as ambassador. He's fluent in Arabic and a few other languages. This is a tough-minded diplomat who I can't believe really relished the chance to return to the Foreign Service as ambassador in Afghanistan.
Sure. Well, who would relish the idea that you have to deal with Karzai? I mean,
it's an impossible situation, particularly at a time where Karzai is cozying up to Pakistan out of his own frustration in dealing with the United States. And the United States is facing a very difficult decision right now, which is another odd time to be changing the Pentagon. The Pentagon's got to come up with numbers to suit Obama's policy statement that he's going to start withdrawing forces significantly from Afghanistan in the summer of 2011. No one expects to see that. And it's the question is, what kind of token withdrawal are we going to see, and how is that going to be presented, and is that kind of strategic deception really going to work with the American public?
Again, I'm speaking with former CIA officer and Pentagon official Mel Goodman. It's not, however, new for a general officer from the military to head up the CIA. I think the second guy was Admiral Radford, wasn't he, after Dulles got booted out after the Bay of Pigs?
Well, the first two...
Oh, the first one was actually...
CIA were from the military.
That's true.
But the most important military appointment was really by Jimmy Carter, who appointed Admiral Stansfield Turner. But I think the general wisdom was, the conventional wisdom was, that you don't want to have a military man running this civilian agency, that the military controls enough of the intelligence community as it is. And if you look at the $80 billion intelligence budget, 85% of that is controlled by the military in terms of military agencies like the National Security Agency and the National Reconnaissance Office that are led by active duty generals. So to take the most important civilian intelligence agency, the CIA, and put it under the hands of the military, which is not known for taking contrarian positions or taking issue with policy, I think is just the wrong signal. But again, I think Obama is intimidated by the military. He's afraid to take on the military. He was very ambivalent, but still went ahead with the increase in forces in Afghanistan on two occasions in 2009 and 2010, made it clear his ambivalence in the West Point speech when he talked about withdrawing from Afghanistan, in the same speech he talked about going into Afghanistan. So the signals are all wrong, but essentially the military is being appeased.
And how another general, of course, was there recently, Hayden, right, from the Air Force.
Well, Michael Hayden, Air Force general, and that really wasn't a very successful tour for either General Hayden or for the CIA, and he was essentially pushed aside. I don't think these military people are neat fits into these civilian positions. James Jones didn't really work as the National Security Advisor. The intelligence czars have not been successful. The generals who've gone overseas as ambassadors, look at General Eikenberry in Afghanistan. He's worn out his welcome with the State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House on various occasions. Now, Ryan Crocker will correct that, and since Crocker worked with Petraeus in Iraq, they'll have a very successful relationship, but that's only going to last for the next 3 or 4 months when Petraeus is slated to come back to Washington to take over the Central Intelligence Agency. So, and when you look at, again, the timing, given where we are in the Obama administration and all of the difficult choices that have to be made and the fact that there'll probably by then be a raging civil war taking place in Libya in the wake of Gaddafi's eventual ouster there, things are really going to get tough in terms of decision-making. So it's a brand-new team again, and we've already learned from Obama's first 2 years that that team hasn't functioned very well to begin with. All of this has to be seen in the context of a very weak national security team from the outset that's now been made weaker. And when you remove Gates, you're really removing the person who has been the most decisive voice for good or for ill, but he has been the most decisive spokesman for American foreign policy. because right now you have a national security advisor who's really a domestic specialist, not an international specialist, who really hasn't carried any water for Obama in the international scene. He rarely speaks. He rarely meets with the press. He rarely goes public with a message that would help Obama, which is one of the chief functions of the national security advisor. So all of this, to me, seems quite unnatural, and I don't see where the Obama administration has strengthened itself, and I certainly don't think that the United States is in a stronger position because of these changes.
Well, Mel Goodman, we spoke just as the Libyan situation began, and you were critical of the fact that they were sort of dawdling and apparently were unsure what to do, and now they finally made a decision, and then they went in, and then they pulled the plug very quickly and handed over to NATO, who've proven to be completely feckless.
Well, again, it's a demonstration of Obama's ambivalence. He waited too long to go in, and yes, I took the position immediately that we needed to become engaged. We needed to mount the no-fly zone. It was going to be a humanitarian disaster. We waited far too long, and we were planning our ouster as we were going in, turning it over to the British and the French, and the last time they ran an operation was the Suez crisis in 1956, which was a diplomatic and international disaster. So this is clearly what the British would call a significant cock-up. Nothing is working right in Libya, and we're practicing a policy of incrementalism while civilians are dying in Libya. But we don't really know who these rebels are. They don't have a leadership situation that's clear. They have military commanders that are fighting with one another. So I think the ground is being set for a very serious civil war once this rebellion is successful in ousting Gaddafi. And the noose is tightening on Gaddafi. It's going much more slowly than Obama said. Remember, he said this would be days, not weeks or months. And it's hard to see exactly when the end will take place. But I think Gaddafi is in a difficult situation. But then all hell, I think, will break loose in Libya, and we won't have a role to play in that situation.
Well, I'm just trying to get a sense, though, of the ultimate argument here is that you're suggesting, as you did when we last spoke, that they should have gone in at the point when Gaddafi was on the ropes and then secured that situation. And because they've dawdled and come in with harsh measures, and that the U.S. has withdrawn the most effective military means against Gaddafi, they'll eventually get him. But this protracted situation will lead to a wider civil war, which could have been avoided earlier. Am I paraphrasing your position?
I think there's the possibility. You know, we can't be sure what the results would have been early on. But I think if we had hit Gaddafi much harder in the very beginning with the AC-130s and the A-10s, we would have caused great concern among his military and among the mercenaries. I don't think they would have rallied to his cause. There would have been general disarray in Libya. We would have had a chance to remove the Gaddafi regime very early and perhaps have an influential position with the rebels in order for them to be conciliatory and to work with one another. The longer this goes on, the more the rebels turn against each other, as they also engage the loyalists, but they're also turning against each other, and we're starting to see a tribal breakdown in Libya of east versus west. So it looks like we're going to face a very long road in Libya, and I find it hard to see an outcome which doesn't include some kind of international peacekeeping force or some very heavy United Nations intervention. I don't think the United States can get involved on the ground. I think Obama has been adamant about saying no boots on the ground, and I think he's right there. But if you're going to have a no-fly zone and rely on air power, which has its limitations, you're still going to have to put ground controllers into Libya to control the kind of bombing that takes place to make it as effective as possible, and that we haven't done.
Well, I thank you for joining us today in Los Angeles, Mel Goodman.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Melvin Goodman, who's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His 42-year government career included service at the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, and the United States Army. In 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials to testify before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as Director of Central Intelligence on the grounds that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. He's the author of Failure of Intelligence, the Decline and Fall of the CIA. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Anne-Marie Slaughter, the former Director of Policy Planning at the State Department.